Bruce and I are happy to be here. It's a little like coming home. Some of you might know that Bruce was assistant here for a while, and I sang in the choir for many years, and so it's like home to us to come back. Both our daughters were married in this church, so we're happy to be here this morning. I've been asked to give a message on kindness, and as I thought about kindness, I thought, what is kindness supposed to do? What is the goal of kindness? And as I've traveled around the world with sleeping children and been able to do some practical things to bring kindness to some of the poorest children, the thing I see that most happens is what you see in their eyes is hope. Somebody came and somebody saw me. And so when we're thinking about kindness at this type of time of the year, Valentine's Day and so on, I think about that. What do we do in our lives to bring not just a kindness, but what does that kindness give to someone else? And you know, kindness really isn't just to meet their need. You know, we can see someone that has a need and we can go and try to meet it. But when we give the kindness of Christ, that creative kindness, what it does is it gives that person hope. I have some hope, somebody sees me. And so what I want to talk to you about this morning is about the touch of Jesus Christ. And as I go through scriptures, and as you have, I'm sure, too, have noticed, that Jesus spent a lot of time physically touching people. He wasn't afraid to touch people. And his healings and some of his blessings came through the human touch. And when I saw the front of the bulletin, I saw those hands, I was greatly encouraged that maybe this is the message for today. We need to touch people. It's not just enough to think a good thought. It's not enough to just say a kind word. There's times we need to touch them. And that's what I've been able to do with sleeping children around the world. I'll give you a bit of a synopsis. I always assume everyone knows about sleeping children around the world, but I'll give you a little synopsis. Sleeping Children was started by Murray Dryden, the father of those famous goalies, Dave and Ken Dryden. And he felt that God had said to him, "Nothing is impossible with me." And he had lived through the Depression, and he had experienced homelessness, and he decided he wanted to create a charity where he could go into the world and provide bed kits and comfort and school supplies and hope to the world's poorest children. So the Sleeping Children Organization, one of the mandates is that we reach the poorest of the children in every country. So when we go as traveling volunteers, we go on our own dollar. We don't get a tax receipt, because Murray Dryden says if you're going for a tax receipt, you shouldn't be going. So we go without a tax receipt. But there's a group of us now that go from country to country, many of us, and we go to touch those children in the poorest places. I've just returned from India, and there's poor, and then there's poor. And I want to put up the slide, the very first slide to show you this morning. I call it a slide. This is a picture I captured. You know, one of those pictures where you just can't believe you got that shot. But you can see this homeless man through a fence. And when you look at that, you think, oh my gosh, how hopeless. How hopeless is in India. And believe me, when you travel around, you think, this is hopeless. There's so much pollution. There's so much garbage. There's so much a lack of sanitation. There's so much homelessness. There's so many orphans. What? You know, it's like it's overwhelming. Your senses are pounding in your head and also up your nose. And you think, oh, I don't know how I can bring hope here. But I wanted to show you this picture because on the other side of the fence, we were giving out bed kits to children. So there you go. You look through the fence and you see hopelessness. But on the other side of the fence is hope. And that's what we're called to do. We can look at a situation, but what can we do to bring kindness and hope to that situation? So can we see the next one, please? Those are the Magnificent Seven. These are the women I traveled with in India. We are aged, this is what we're called, the Magnificent Seven, 5.5 knee replacements and 1 hip. We range in age from 65 to 77. So there we were. That's our first day, finally got cleaned up from about a 35-hour trip to India, ready in our hotel lobby to start our trip. We came in as, I knew a couple of ladies, but most of us were strangers. We went home as sisters. And that's what happens when you have a common goal. People ask me, why do you do this? Why do you travel? Why do you make your husband worry so much? Why do your kids worry? You have health problems. Why do you go? Well, I go because I've got to tell you this story. I was teaching school, and a teacher came to me, a librarian, and said, there's an organization. This was in about 2003. They said, I think you'd be interested in it. So she told me about it, and I thought, I'm really interested in that. Wow. So I began to raise money at school. Some of you taught with me. We raised money at school for this organization. And then I felt in my heart, I want to travel with them. And at the time, I was suffering with MS. We didn't have a lot of money. We had situations. I thought, I want to travel with them. And my kids looked at me and said, yeah, right, Mom, sure. And Bruce said, yeah, right, that's going to happen. You're going to go. And so the first time I went to the doctor, he said, absolutely not. I will not sign that form. So I said, okay, strike one. So I waited the next year. I went again. He said, you're persistent. I said, well, I'm doing everything you tell me to do for my health. And he said, well, no, you can't go. I can't in good conscience send you. So I thought, God, why did you put that in my heart if I can't go? So this is the story, and I want to tell you, this was one of the pivotal moments in my life. I was in downtown Toronto, and my daughter just had eye surgery on one eye, and I was looking after her in her apartment. She was recently married. I said, let's go out, Carrie. Let's go for a walk. We'll go to Canadian Tire on the Danforth. Okay, so we went out. Suddenly, this van screeches to a halt. A man jumps out of the van. He goes completely on his stomach on the sidewalk. He holds onto my feet, and he said, I've been sent by God, and these feet will go to the nations for the children. Blow your mind? These feet will go to the nations for the children. My daughter was there. I'm not lying. She witnessed it. Believe me, Carrie wouldn't let me tell a tale. But he told me I would go. I said, who are you? And he said, well, I travel in this van, and God speaks to me, and if I have something for somebody, I give it to them. So I came home, I went to the doctor one more time, and he said, okay, you can go. I didn't tell him the story, but I went. So that started my seven-trip life with sleeping children. Now, what I want to talk to you a little bit about this morning is how when God puts something in your heart, you don't always get the big yes right at the beginning. Sometimes you have to fight for that yes. You have to believe that that's what you're supposed to do. And I have no doubt in my mind that I have fulfilled what I think the mandate for me was, is to touch the children. The interesting thing is the motto for sleeping children is for the children. That's the motto. So when that man touched my feet and said, you will go to the nations for the children, I knew how that was supposed to work out. So we began, Bruce and I, planning and saving for these trips. And I've been to Sri Lanka after the tsunami. Then I went to the Philippines, Tanzania twice, Uganda, Bangladesh, and then India. India, by far, was the hardest trip, I think because of my age and also because of the conditions. But when you see the pictures, you'll understand what joy it brings to be part of this kind of organization, because this kind of kindness brings hope. So, can I have the next slide, please? Now, this is a picture of one of the distributions, and I want you to notice, I didn't even realize how many times I'm touching children in these pictures, but that was one of the things I thought I should do. Be sure to touch them. Be sure to put your hand on them and touch them, because you're giving your love away. You're giving your kindness away. And we did this 7,000 times in India. So 7,000 kits in India, various locations. So this was one little girl that got her kit, and the dress she's wearing is a dress that is provided in the kit. She's got a backpack, and so she had her picture taken with me with her kit. So the next slide, please. All right, one of the other thing that I've learned about kindness is how when you are ministering to someone, or when you're friends with someone, or when you're giving kindness away, you have to give your undivided attention to that person. And I'm going to tell you what I've learned over the years from being a pastor's wife and a chaplain's wife and being in church work and all the rest, is you can't schedule mercy. You can't schedule compassion. It doesn't fit on a Fitbit. It just doesn't. You cannot count your steps, because whatever you're doing at that moment, you have to do it to your fullest. So one thing they taught us in Sleeping Children is, when you're giving that kid away, don't think of the other 6,999 kids you have to do. For that child at that time, this may be the only gift they ever receive in their lives. Because a lot of these children come from the ghettos, from the slums of Calcutta. They're not going to get another gift probably in their lifetime. So take your time and be with each child. So the Rotarians who worked with us over in India, they had the most brilliant idea. After that goes through the little line that we do, we dress the children in their new clothes, we line them up, we take a picture of them to send back to the donor in Canada, and then we give them the kit, and then they go to an area like you see right there, where the parents are waiting for them, and they just kind of are all waving at each other. The Rotarians had a brilliant idea this year, never seen it before. Let the child say their own name. And it brought us to tears. They never had a chance to, I mean, them using a microphone, that's never gonna happen. No one wants to know their name. They're the untouchables. They're not to be touched. You know, these are untouchable people. I'm in the caste system, they say. Nobody touches me, nobody gives me a microphone. But this lovely Rotarian man, what is your name? I can't even tell you the Indian names. They would say it so proudly. And their mothers were beaming. You know what mothers are like? My child just spoke in a microphone. My gosh, my life is complete. And they would run in and gather up their child in their arms. And that child was almost more proud of speaking into that microphone than they were of anything else that happened that day. Someone sees me. Someone hears me. Someone touches me. And it's an amazing thing. I didn't have any chance to see anything touristy. I don't know where the Taj Mahal even was. I really wanted to go to the mother house, but we had to work that day, so I never made it. So I said to God, oh darn, I really wanted to go to Mother Teresa's mission house. I never get to see any of that. He said, don't worry, I've got plans, don't worry. So I'm sitting with a gentleman who is helping us at the distribution. I said to him, oh, I really wanted to get the mission house. I'm not going to make it, though. He said, you know what? He said, I worked with Mother Teresa. And so we had this long conversation about Mother Teresa. He himself was a Muslim. He said, I said, is she everything? Was she everything that we read about? And more, he said. And more. So he started an orphanage and a private school for the poor children of Calcutta. And he buys their uniforms. And they have wonderful teachers. And they teach them English and they give them a chance. So those children who were between 13 and 15 were helping with the distribution. And after it was over, one of the little girls in her uniform came to me. Thanks, she said, thank you, ma'am, for letting me serve. I'm saying, well, you're very welcome. Where's your iPad? You've got a phone, you know? Anyway, she was so thankful. So he said to me, there's one thing that he does every year. He said, my students go to the leper, they're not really colonies now, but the leper hospital. He said, because I tell them they must touch them. They must touch the lepers. And he said, because it's not contagious. And he said, but they need to know there's no one that's an untouchable. Isn't that amazing? So those kids are getting that education. Better watch my time. Let's see the next picture. All right, this is can you see my hair? Isn't that wonderful? It just got worse and worse and worse. Anyway, this is a little girl getting her lining up to get a picture taken. And I want to tell you a little bit about what we learn as a team when we're together there. On this team was a doctor. She worked at St. Michael's and she was well thought of, she was an anesthesiologist. We had a public health nurse, two other nurses, and there were two teachers, right? All retired. But, you know, I thought, wow, we've got a doctor on the team, you know. I thought, wow, you know, that's pretty good, a doctor, and so on. And, you know, I thought that was kind of cool. Well, a doctor doesn't look like a doctor when she's vomiting in the trash can at the airport. We're all the same. We're all the same. So she got sick at the airport, so she was, and she came home back to me and she said, that was interesting. And she got some food poisoning. But, you know, we come in together as sort of a little bit of friends, maybe more just strangers. But the time you've used the washrooms in Calcutta together, you are close. You know, you are close. It was like a military exercise. Okay, we're going in. Okay, has everybody got the equipment? Yep. Everybody, who's going to guard the door? That would be me. It's my turn. All right. And then you get in there. You got to go. Just go. Of course, you know, that happens. You can't go. You know, hurry up, Nancy. We got to move on. Okay, we're trying to jump. Hold on. That's where the sisterhood happens. I want to also just talk to you about a few ways that we actually show kindness. We don't have to go to India or Sri Lanka or anywhere else to show kindness or give hope. We do that every day as we focus on the love of Jesus for us. When I came to know Jesus myself, I was an absolute disaster. And like Bruce will testify, can't you say that I was a pretty big disaster? He was worse, so there was that to consider. So I was in the hospital with having our son Matthew, an absolute mess. And I looked at this poor kid and I said, poor you, like you are headed for some real problems here, you know? And there was a girl that was kitty corner over in the corner bed, and she was smoking and she was reading her Bible. And I said, hey, what are you doing there? She said, I'm trying to get my life cleaned up. I said, can you help? And she said, well, I don't know, I'm pretty messed up myself. And she said, but you can come and hang with me. So we hung around together, and you know, her kindness towards me, she didn't judge me. She didn't say this, that, and thou. She said, I messed up too, so let's work on this together. And that's how I came to understand the love of God. Not through thus and so and do and not. It was through, I see you, I touch you, and I hear your name. And that's what Jesus does for all of us. There's a few other things I was thinking of in terms of being in India and the kind of work that I've done over the years is that you really have to let go of your own expectations. Because if you expect certain things, I mean, time is just an idea in most of these countries. It's never really the time you're going to be there. So we're so used to structure and this and that, we're going to be there and this is going to happen. We just have to go with the flow. When they get there, we get there. When we don't get there, we don't get there. And they try their best to make things work for us, and that's what we do. And that's true in all of our lives. We have to let our children go. Isn't that a great one, eh? We have to let our children go. We have to let our lives go. We have to let our schedules go. We have to let our expectations go. Because the people that usually need the touch are not going to always be the people who are going to say, oh, thank you, you know. It's going to take more than one touch over and over again and a commitment to that person to see them grow. The other thing I learned is there's not enough Parel in India to get the job done. When I went to the travel doctor, he said to me, well, if you're ever going to get cholera, you're going to the right place. Well, there's a word of encouragement. If you're ever going to get diphtheria, that's where you'll get it. So as we were going through these places and as we were going through these, you know, we kept trying to put Purell in our hands. We kept trying to sanitize. But you know what? There was no amount of Purell that would sanitize you from what you were involved in. And it's true in when we develop relationship with people, don't try to sanitize them. Don't try to sanitize their lives and you know, put Purell all over them and say, you know, oh, I'm going to sanitize you. I'm going to make sure that, you know, you turn into what I think you should be. You know, we cannot do that. We cannot sanitize people. We can only give them the love of Christ. When I was also trying to sort of encapsulate what I've learned. You learn a lot through your team members. And one of the ladies on our team this time, she had been a leader of Sleeping Children in another Indian country, and she never took a picture. And she sat in the back of the bus, and she was very social and everything, but when we were traveling, she sat there looking out the window. And she was very, very focused on what she was doing. And we were at the distributions, she had her job to do, and she was focused on that job. That's what she was doing. And so afterwards, someone said to her, hey, you know, like, what are you doing at the back of the bus there? And she said, I'm taking it all in. I may never pass this way again. So there was another lady, and I thought, I'm going to take that phone right out of her hand and jump on it. She was taking pictures of us doing everything. And so she was seeing her, the one that was taking pictures all the time. It was like she was seeing what she was doing through what she's going to look at later. The woman who took no pictures and just touched the children and spent time with the children, she was living in the now. And she said, you know, I don't need to have a picture of everything. I just want to enjoy where I am right now. So that was something to learn too. So next picture, please. You can see the children there. That was that job for me that day was to line them up for their pictures. It's sort of like herding cats, you know? And so this little one was pretty scared. She was, her backpack was as big as she was, so I held her there for a while. You can see the look on her face. I didn't see one other North American or European where we were. So this skin and this size of woman was just kind of right off her radar. So, but she let me hold her. The next one, please. And this is kind of a bittersweet picture for me because before I left on this last trip, Bruce and I decided that this would be my last one. That I had done seven, and I knew that really I had kind of done as much as I can do at my age, and so because it usually is a 3-year wait now before you go again, and that would put me into another decade. So I thought, no, this is my last one. So this was my very last time giving out kits. So this picture is of me giving it out to this little girl, and I knew this would be the last time I would do that particular work. Next one, please. And this was my team. These were the young, they call them Rotaracts. I don't know if they call them that here in Canada or not, but the young Rotarians who were coming to help us with the, you know, they would help us to unload the trucks and so on. And also they helped me with the kits as well. There's not a Rotarian that doesn't like their picture taken, let me tell you. You say we're gonna do a picture and the Rotarians are there. So we got our picture taken together. So that's a famous memory for me too. And the next one, please. And this was the very, very last one of the day. And the team let me have my picture taken with this little girl as well. And I was so blessed, you know, I didn't cry. I didn't cry because it was my last. I felt really thankful